Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Welcome to The Deep Dive. We're the show that tackles those really big, complex ideas shaping our world. We try to cut through the noise and give you the insights you need.
That's the goal.
And today, our mission is, well, it's pretty ambitious. We're diving deep into a framework called Awakened Global Governance, or AGG. This comes from Sandeep Mehra.
And it's important to stress right from the start, this isn't just about reform. It's not tweaking the edges.
It's pitched as a radical architectural proposal, mm-hmm. a whole new way for civilization to organize itself globally.
Exactly. And it really starts by, well, looking squarely at the current situation. The framework argues that the system we have now is fundamentally broken.
You can see the cracks everywhere, can't you? The source material talks about deep fractures.
It does. We have this conventional governance model, you know, treaties, international bodies, this idea of collective order, but it just keeps failing again and again on the biggest cross-border challenges.
And these aren't minor issues. We're talking existential stuff. Climate change is moving way faster than any agreement we make.
Pandemics show up the huge inequities, the lack of coordination. Financial systems seem perpetually unstable.
Then you've got mass migration, security threats, ecological collapse just continuing almost, well, unchecked.
Right. And the institutions, they hold summits, they issue declarations, lots of paper gets produced.
But on the ground, the reality doesn't really change much, does it?
That's the core critique. The existing structure, it's plagued by inconsistent compliance. And critically, the enforcement is just weak.
So cooperation sounds good. But when push comes to shove,
it collapses back into competition, into rivalry, almost instantly, you know, when political or economic pressure mounts.
Which means the outcomes are really shaped by whoever holds the most power, not by some shared global interest.
Precisely. The current machinery, it was designed really to manage competing national interests. It wasn't built for shared stewardship of, well, the planet.
Okay, so if that's the problem, a system that looks okay superficially but doesn't deliver, how does Awakened Global Governance, AGG, propose to fix it? What is this evolutionary next step?
Well, Mehra frames AGG as moving beyond just, you know, more agreements, more summits. The aim is to create a living system.
A living system. What does that mean in practice?
It means rooted in clarity, in conscience, and intellective alignment. And here's the fundamental break, the key difference. Conventional governance relied almost entirely on procedures.
Right, the rules, the steps, the bureaucracy.
Exactly. AGG instead calls for presence.
Presence. Okay, that word carries a lot of weight. It sounds ethical, immediate.
It implies an unfiltered engagement with the truth of a situation, yeah. It suggests leaders, institutions, they need to be fully present, fully accountable, not just checking box on a form.
So it's a call to reshape the very structures of global governance.
That's it. So they actively embody fairness, soul, vision, responsibility. The goal is guiding our interdependence towards planetary balance, towards trust.
And it ties governance directly to leadership.
Absolutely. It insists that nations, institutions, individual leaders, they have to act together, like one coherent field of shared responsibility for what comes next.
Okay, let's dig into that philosophical core. This shift from procedure to presence. Because it seems like everything else in AGG flows from this distinction.
It really does define the whole approach. And what's striking in the source material is how clearly it paints traditional global governance as, well, just machinery.
Machinery? Like cogs and wheels.
Kind of. Treaties drafted in complex diplomatic language, big, flashy summits, declarations that sound impressive but often lack any real bite. These are described as the rituals of cooperation.
We go through the motions.
Exactly. We perform the rituals, but the underlying crises, wars drag on, inequality gets worse, forests keep falling, they often remain completely untouched by this, elegant machinery.
It feels like a performance sometimes, doesn't it? Designed more for political optics back home than for actually solving the problem.
That's precisely the critique. It satisfies the need to look like action is being taken, but not the actual need for change.
Yeah, we've all seen those big global talks where it seems more about who gets the credit or, the best photo op. AGG seems to be demanding a change in motivation, fundamentally.
It is, and maybe the biggest shift here is from representation to responsibility.
Explain that. How does that differ?
Well, in the conventional system, success is often measured by how well national interests are represented, how well they're negotiated. The key question is always, who speaks for whom?
Right. Protecting national sovereignty, advancing national goals.
AGG basically says that framework is insufficient for the kind of planetary crises we face now. It reframes the question completely. It asks, who stands accountable to life itself?
Wow. Okay, that is a tectonic shift. Accountability to life itself.
Yeah, it pulls the focus away from that inherently competitive nation-state dynamic, and it places it squarely on a common ethic, planetary stewardship.
So it binds everyone, governments, markets, civil society.
To subordinate their narrow self-interest to the survival and the flourishing of the whole, it's a demanding standard.
And that change in perspective, it leads to a different way of measuring success, right? You mentioned moving beyond compliance to coherence.
Exactly. In the current system, if you tick the boxes, meet the legal minimums, number of signatures on a treaty, submitting a report on time, you're compliant. And that's often seen as success.
We see that all the time, especially with environmental regulations, don't we?
Yeah.
A factory might be compliant with local rules, but add up a million compliant factories.
And you still get ecological collapse. Precisely the issue. A policy can be perfectly compliant on paper, but utterly incoherent with the actual goal, like ecological balance or human dignity.
So AGG measures success by coherence.
Coherence. Are globe systems, finance, trade, climate, security, are they genuinely aligned? Do they actually support the survival, the dignity, the flourishing of people, and the planet in the long run?
That demands a much deeper kind of honesty, doesn't it?
Radical honesty, yes. Take a trade deal, it might be compliant if everyone signs it.
Yeah.
But if it relies on, say, exploited labor in the supply chain or destroying vital ecosystems.
Then it's incoherent, even if legal.
Fundamentally incoherent with this ethic of stewardship. It fails the coherence test.
Okay, but if we move away from documents and legal compliance as the main way to keep order, what sustains it? Doesn't it become fragile, subject to political winds?
The argument is that order is sustained by integrating a living ethic. The source material really emphasizes this. Declarations alone, paper commitments, they can't save us.
So the stability comes from.
From the ethics, the truth, the human values that leaders and institutions actually carry into action. The intention has to be alive, constantly present. We can't mistake the letter of the law for the spirit of global responsibility.
Can you give a concrete example? Living ethic versus procedure.
Think about how the world responds to refugee crises. Procedural governance focuses on border controls, legal quotas, definitions of eligibility, often leading to inhumane outcomes because it's just about managing the problem according to the rule.
Right, processing people through the system.
The living ethic, however, would insist that protecting human rights is absolutely non-negotiable, no exceptions, regardless of political inconvenience or cost.
Or treating ecological balance not as a bargaining chip in trade talks.
But as a fundamental duty. Exactly. When cooperation is driven by a shared, acknowledged purpose, the well-being of the whole, then governance stops being this abstract thing and becomes an active, visible, ethical guide for everything we do.
Okay, so we've got the philosophical underpinning. Let's move to the structure, the architecture of AGG. You mentioned two components: static foundation, the four anchors, and a dynamic process, the living rhythm. Let's start with those anchors, the foundation stones.
Right. These anchors are designed to integrate the practical demands of governing with that ethical call for presence and responsibility we just talked about. They're like the fixed reference points the whole system has to keep orienting itself towards.
The first one is inner vision, a compass for civilization. Now, most international bodies have a mission statement or a charter. How is this inner vision any different?
It's about embedding foresight, not just stating current goals. A mission statement says, this is what we do now. Inner vision constantly asks the question, what is the thriving future we are consciously shaping together over the next 100 years or even longer?
100 years, that's a long view. Yeah. Conventional governance is often stuck in much shorter cycles.
Exactly. Election cycles, quarterly reports, 5-year plans. Inner vision demands that long-term systemic strategies for climate stability, for equitable security, for human rights are baked into every decision, even the small ones.
So it acts like a filter, a North Star.
Precisely. Filtering out those short-sighted, purely reactive policies that might seem beneficial now but undermine the long-term future.
That sounds incredibly difficult to actually put into practice, especially when, you know, national political survival often depends on responding to immediate pressures, popular demands.
Yeah.
How do you get governments to prioritize a century-long vision over the next election?
Well, the framework suggests integrating this vision into mandatory planning cycles, making long-term sustainability and equity actual legal and economic criteria for how resources are allocated. It fundamentally shifts the definition of national success away from just GDP growth towards something like sustainable resilience.
Sustainable resilience.
Okay.
Which brings us nicely to the second anchor, heart-centered alignment. Trust in the global arena.
Yes.
Now, heart-centered. Given the state of global politics, the rampant mistrust between nations, that sounds, frankly, a bit utopian. What's the practical mechanism here? How do you compel nations to operate from trust?
The mechanism proposed is legitimacy. Heart-centered alignment demands that policies, treaties, all the institutional mechanisms, they must reflect undeniable fairness, respect, and dignity, not just in their wording, but in their actual design and execution.
If an agreement is seen as unfair, even by a minority,
the system loses coherence. It loses legitimacy. This anchor tries to operationalize fairness by requiring, for example, mandatory and central roles for the most vulnerable populations in negotiations.
Who are the vulnerable populations in this context?
Those most impacted by the issues, climate change victims, people affected by financial crises, refugees displaced by war, they can't just be observers.
So it's not just giving them a microphone for 5 minutes, but actually giving their perspective real weight in shaping the outcome, like, say, in migration pacts.
Exactly. Ensuring migration agreements aren't just dictated by wealthy receiving countries, but genuinely co-created with sending nations and migrant representatives themselves.
That changes the whole dynamic of diplomacy.
It aims to transform it from a zero-sum game, you know, where my gain is your loss, into a cooperative effort, where the shared outcome, grounded in this awakened conscience, acknowledging everyone's fundamental worth, is the only acceptable measure of success.
Okay. The third anchor, life's essence. Adaptive governance for a turbulent world. This seems to acknowledge that, well, things go wrong. The world is chaotic. How does AGG build adaptability into what are often very rigid international structures without losing integrity?
This is the resilience anchor. Life's essence is about equipping governance with flexibility, with the capacity to respond quickly to shocks. But, and this is key, always paired with unwavering principle.
We saw how fragile things were during the pandemic, didn't we? Global health systems, supply chains, they fractured.
They did, because they were built largely on procedural compliance, not on adaptive integrity. Life's essence aims to fix that.
So if a major crisis hits a new pandemic, a massive technological disruption, some sudden ecological tipping point,
right,
what stops the system from just defaulting back to every nation for itself, like we saw with vaccine hoarding?
The commitment to life's essence incorporates co-creation as absolutely essential. This means diverse groups, experts, local communities on the ground, scientists, civil society are pre-integrated into the decision-making frameworks.
So adaptation isn't just decided top-down by politicians.
No. It ensures adaptive measures are informed by broad knowledge and ethical consensus, not just political convenience. It demands mechanisms for rapid, maybe even decentralized decision-making during shocks, but crucially, maintaining transparency and accountability. Adaptability can't become an excuse to abandon core duties like human rights or environmental protection.
The structure has to bend, but not break its principles.
Right. Bend, don't break. And certainly don't ethically collapse under pressure. Resilience with integrity.
That's a powerful distinction. Okay, finally, the fourth anchor, materiality, turning vision into reality. This sounds like it's all about execution, getting things done.
Materiality is the anchor that insists on closing that gap between the promises made in meeting rooms and the actual lived reality on the ground. It's the reality check.
So the measure of success isn't the treaty document itself.
No. The true measure is the tangible reality. Are carbon emissions actually going down? Are workers in global supply chains genuinely protected? Are financial systems preventing exploitation or just shuffling it around?
So let's take climate agreements. If they rely heavily on things like carbon offsets, which can be, you know, notoriously hard to verify.
Materiality would flag that immediately as a potential failure of execution, even if the procedural boxes are ticked. It demands robust, transparent, independent monitoring and accountability, going way beyond just self-reporting by nations or corporations.
Accountability means?
It means real consequences, holding violators accountable, whether they're companies or countries, to the collective ethic, ensuring justice is served for those harmed by environmental damage or economic malpractice. Governance has to make a positive difference in people's daily lives. It can't just be abstract rules decided far away.
These four anchors: intervision, heart-centered alignment, life's essence, and materiality, they provide the bedrock, the stable foundation for the whole thing.
That's the idea. The unshakable foundation for the system's coherence over the long haul.
Okay, foundation established with the anchors. Now we move to the dynamic part, the living rhythm. You describe this as five spiral steps guiding collective action, making governance less of a static performance and more of a continuous adaptive presence.
Right.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
The rhythm is how the system interacts with the world, how it breathes, responds. It's the ongoing process of collective awakening and then acting on that awareness.
The first step is accept, facing global reality. You mentioned radical honesty earlier. What specific illusions does conventional governance cling to that AGG forces us to confront?
Well, the big one is accepting that our major problems, climate change, inequality, conflict, are systemic and structural. They aren't just isolated crises we can solve one by one.
So shedding illusions like?
Like the illusion that infinite economic growth is possible or desirable on a finite planet. The illusion that trickle-down economics actually works for everyone. The illusion that any nation can achieve true security in isolation from the rest of the world.
We have to face the facts, however uncomfortable.
Exactly. Accept means confronting things like systemic climate collapse, deep-seated economic injustice, the constant threat of resource wars, not as anomalies, but as failures inherent in the current structure. Until we really own those truths, any policy response is just kicking the can down the road.
Okay, accepting reality clears the decks. That leads to step two. See, distinguishing alignment from distortion. This sounds like developing a critical eye.
It is. It's described as the discipline of perception. It demands intellectual and ethical rigor to separate genuine solutions from those that maybe subtly serve narrow interests.
So looking behind the curtain.
Pretty much. Auditing policies not just for their stated intent, but for their likely and sometimes hidden consequences. Can you tell the difference between a trade policy that genuinely aims for shared prosperity and one that's really a disguised form of resource extraction or exploitation of weaker nations?
How do you do that in practice?
By requiring transparency, by listening to diverse voices, especially those usually excluded. It's about seeing the true impact and the real intention behind an agreement, identifying where self-interest is wearing the mask of global good.
So, for instance, if a powerful bloc of nations proposes a global tech standard, say, for AI ethics, but it just happens to perfectly align with their dominant industries and disadvantages competitors.
The C-step would call that out as distortion. Even if it's wrapped in appealing language about safety or security, you have to see through the spin.
Okay, reality accepted, distortion identified, then the system moves to unite, building coherence across systems. This sounds like a practical bit, getting everyone pulling in the same direction.
This is where you translate awareness into coordinated action. It's the practical demand for all the global actors, states, international organizations, civil society, the private sector, to actually put shared purpose above rivalry.
That's the dream, isn't it? Getting historically competitive players to cooperate effectively.
Unite requires active mechanisms to ensure cooperation genuinely overrides rivalry. It means, for example, making sure climate commitments aren't constantly being undermined by contradictory trade policies, or that human rights standards aren't ignored when big investment treaties are signed.
Can you give a concrete example of Unite in action?
Think about a global health crisis. Unite would mean ensuring critical knowledge, like vaccine formulas, diagnostic techniques, or even clean energy patents in a climate context, is shared openly and equitably for the benefit of all. Not hoarded in national or commercial silos, breaking down those barriers.
Right. Once you have that unity, that coherence, the rhythm moves to shift, transforming structures, not just outcomes. This sounds like going for the root causes.
Exactly. Shift is the commitment to deep structural change, moving beyond just managing the symptoms of crises. It's not enough to bail out banks after a financial crash. You have to embed clarity and fairness into the financial system to prevent the next one from happening.
So reforming the underlying rules.
Yes. Reforming trade rules to include mandatory labor and environmental standards. Updating international law so there's real accountability for ecological destruction. Maybe even transforming voting structures within international bodies to make them fairer and more representative. Governance here becomes less about reacting and more about designing systems for harmonic balance.
Systemic harmony.
Okay.
And the final step in this spiraling rhythm is improvise. Adaptive resilience for an unpredictable future. How is this different from just reacting to crises as they happen?
Improvise acknowledges that we can't predict everything. The world is dynamic, turbulent. It ensures governance can adapt rapidly to major disruptions. Think about the sudden impact of AI or new biological threats we haven't even conceived of yet.
But adapt how?
Crucially, adapt without abandoning integrity or core purpose. It relies on building in continuous feedback loops, incorporating new scientific information, diverse perspectives, and ethical checks almost instantaneously, so the system learns and adjusts in real time.
So it's not just reacting blindly, but adapting intelligently and ethically.
That's the goal, rapid adaptability, but anchored in principle. This ensures that global cooperation remains trustworthy and reliable, even when things get really unpredictable and chaotic. These five steps, accept, see, unite, shift, improvise, they form that continuous living rhythm that keeps the system aligned with its core purpose, its anchors.
Now, a really critical point raised in the critique of the original material was the need to really flesh out Section 3, the dimensions of application. Because AGG isn't just a theory, it's meant to be applied across the board. And crucially, it insists these areas are interconnected.
That's right. This is where the philosophy hits the ground, where we see how these principles, presence, coherence, the anchors, the rhythm, translate into functional requirements for how we actually run the world. And the key is rejecting the siloed thinking that dominates now.
Where solving a climate problem might accidentally worsen inequality, or a trade deal ignores human rights.
Exactly. AGG demands coherence across these dimensions. Let's start with diplomacy and security. If diplomacy is sort of the first expression of governance, what does awakened diplomacy look like?
Different from the traditional model.
Very different. It reframes diplomacy as stewardship, as building an architecture of trust, not just managing rivalry or performing for the cameras. Conventional diplomacy often defines success as relative gain. You know, I got a better deal than you, or I maintained my strategic advantage.
So winning the negotiation.
Awakened diplomacy changes the success metric. Success is measured by the stability provided to all parties involved. Security frameworks have to prioritize dignity preserved and trust built, not just military strength or strategic positioning.
Can you give an example?
Imagine negotiating over a scarce shared resource, like a major river system crossing borders. Traditional diplomacy might see it as a zero-sum game. How much water can my country secure? Awakened diplomacy approaches it as an opportunity to co-create regional stability, shared prosperity, and ecological health for everyone reliant on that water. The goal shifts.
I see. From winning to co-creating stability, that flows naturally into global trade and economic systems, doesn't it? These systems often prioritize pure market efficiency above everything else.
And AGG says that's fundamentally insufficient. It mandates that trade frameworks, financial systems, they must serve more than just markets. They have to actively protect workers, sustain local and regional economies, and uphold global fairness. Growth alone isn't enough. It has to be coherent ethical growth.
So what does that mean functionally? What needs to change in how we manage global trade and finance?
The source material lays out some key requirements. First, mandated transparency in financial systems. No more hiding money in shadowy tax havens. No more complex derivatives designed purely to exploit regulatory loopholes. Light needs to be shown everywhere.
And second,
equitable trade rules. This means embedding mandatory, verifiable labor standards and environmental protections directly into trade agreements. Not as optional add-ons, but as core requirements for market access.
So if a company or even a country can't prove its supply chain is free from exploitation or isn't causing major ecological harm,
it could potentially lose the right to participate freely in the global marketplace under this model. The ultimate measure of success becomes shared prosperity and human dignity, not just aggregate GDP figures.
Wow. That would require a fundamental rethink of institutions like the World Trade Organization. It's moving way beyond just tariffs and quotas.
It's about embedding ethics deep within the mechanics of global exchange. And that ethical core is absolutely non-negotiable when it comes to human rights and justice. AGG states these are universal commitments that have to be functionally embedded everywhere.
How do you embed a lived ethic of justice into, say, trade agreements or tech regulations? Bureaucracies aren't known for their lived ethics.
It means justice isn't just a reactive mechanism you use after harm is done. It has to be preventative, built in from the start.
Like privacy by design in tech.
Exactly. Think human rights by design, requiring global tech companies, for instance, or governments using surveillance tech to build privacy, non-discrimination, and ethical use principles into their systems from day one. Not as an afterthought. The individual human being must always remain at the center.
So if a big infrastructure project funded internationally displaces local communities without fair compensation or consultation,
that project is fundamentally incoherent with AGG. Regardless of its potential economic benefits on paper, justice has to be lived, not just declared.
Okay, let's turn to perhaps the most urgent dimension, environmental protection and climate action. What does AGG demand here that maybe the current Paris Agreement structure, for all its merits, lacks?
It makes ecological balance a foundational principle, non-negotiable, embedded in all treaties and economic mechanisms, not just siloed off in specific climate agreements. Sustainability shifts from being a policy choice governments can opt in or out of to being a fundamental core duty.
A duty, like defending borders.
Almost. It means environmental costs, carbon emissions, biodiversity loss, pollution have to be fully integrated into economic and financial systems. Forests, oceans, the atmosphere, they are treated explicitly as global commons, vital for all life. Climate governance becomes, as the source puts it, a shared survival pact.
So instead of countries haggling over their individual emission reduction targets, their nationally determined contributions, which often add up to failure.
The AGG framework approaches environmental preservation more like collective self-defense. It's a shared obligation for survival.
And the enforcement would have to reflect that urgency.
Absolutely. If a nation or a major corporation is found to be causing irreversible harm to a shared ecosystem, say, massive deforestation affecting global climate patterns, the collective response under AGG would need to be swift, decisive, and comprehensive, going far beyond just diplomatic protests or symbolic fines.
Okay. Next up, migration and public health. These two areas really highlighted global interdependence, often painfully, in recent years.
They certainly did. AGG requires migration policies that are grounded in respecting dignity and protecting rights throughout the entire process, and crucially, preventing exploitation, whether it's exploitation of migrants themselves or the brain drain exploitation of developing countries.
And it's not just about managing borders.
No, it demands looking at the root causes, addressing the factors that force people to move in the first place, climate change, conflict, deep economic disparities. These need to be tackled coherently as part of the migration picture.
And for global health.
Systems must be designed for coordination with speed, integrity, and, again, transparency. This means having pre-agreed mechanisms for sharing critical resources, data, medical supplies, intellectual property like vaccine know-how during a pandemic. Public health is treated as a global common good, stewarded with compassion and fairness, not as a commodity countries can hoard for national advantage.
That requires a lot of trust and pre-planning. Finally, the dimension of knowledge, technology, and innovation. Things like AI, biotech, they're evolving incredibly fast. How does AGG propose to guide these powerful new tools?
The principle here is guidance through conscience. The absolute core mandate is ensuring these emerging technologies serve humanity, enhance stability, and promote flourishing rather than destabilizing societies, increasing inequality, or creating new forms of control.
How do you ensure that, though? The incentives often push the other way.
The source material explicitly calls for something quite radical. An awakened global council of conscience.
A council of conscience. What would that look like?
Imagine a body composed of leading ethicists, diverse scientists, wisdom keepers, truly awakened leaders. Their job would be to actively align new intelligence AI, genetic engineering, etc., with the fundamental values of life, assessing their coherence with human dignity and planetary well-being.
So this council would review major technological deployments, like global AI systems or advanced biotech applications.
Yes. Assess them for their potential to cause fragmentation, exploitation, or undermine the AGG anchors like heart-centered alignment or materiality. Its role is to prevent technological power from running wild, ensuring it's channeled towards collective good, resilience, and genuine creativity, not just profit or power.
Does this council have teeth? Can it actually curb powerful corporate or state actors?
Its authority within the AGG framework derives from coherence. If a technology or its deployment is deemed fundamentally incoherent with the core principles, if it demonstrably violates human dignity, fuels conflict, or destabilizes ecosystems, then the coherent global system under AGG would be mandated to reject or regulate it strictly.
Okay, so the big takeaway across all these dimensions, diplomacy, trade, rights, environment, health, tech, is systemic alignment. It can't be treated separately.
Absolutely not. That's maybe the most crucial operational point. They are deeply interwoven dimensions of one single living global constitution, if you like. You can't achieve genuine climate action if your financial system incentivizes fossil fuels. You can't have fair trade if diplomacy is still based on pure rivalry. Coherence requires alignment across the board. Every policy needs to reinforce that foundational ethic of planetary stewardship. So we have the architecture, the stable anchors, the dynamic rhythm, and we see how it applies across different dimensions. Now let's look at the actors. Who actually makes this happen? This leads us to collective responsibility.
Right. AGG isn't just one organization. It's described as a living field shaped by everyone's interactions. So what's the role for the existing international institutions, the UN, the African Union, the EU, and others? Do they just disappear?
No, not at all. Their role remains crucial. They provide the scaffolding, the continuity, the institutional memory, but their core value proposition shifts significantly under AGG.
How so?
Their strength, their legitimacy becomes defined by their capacity to uphold integrity, to enforce agreements with genuine fairness and courage, even when facing pressure from powerful members. They need to resist political compromise on core ethical principles. They become the guardians of the rules and norms, ensuring they remain trustworthy reference points for everybody.
Okay, so institutions provide the stable framework. But the real power, day-to-day, still rests with governments, with national states. What does AGG demand from them? It must be huge.
It's transformative. The core demand is that governments must fundamentally shift their perspective. They need to recognize that building global trust is no longer a secondary concern, something nice to have after national interests are secured. Under AGG, global trust must be placed on par with national interest.
On par? That's a major change.
It leads to the non-negotiable operating principle. Not me first, but we first. A government's leadership quality, its success, is measured by its courage to make decisions that serve the shared future of humanity, even if politically difficult domestically. The understanding has to be that true, long-term national interests can only be secured within a stable, coherent global system.
But let's be realistic. Imagine a country facing a severe domestic crisis, maybe a resource shortage, a recession. How does a leader justify "not me first" to their own citizens when the choice is, say, hoarding a vital medicine versus sharing it globally during a pandemic? That's politically toxic.
That's where the system design, rooted in the anchors like inner vision, becomes critical. The AGG framework demands proactive planning and pre-agreed protocols for exactly these kinds of crises.
So you don't decide in the heat of the moment.
Exactly. You have established mechanisms for fair, transparent, shared resource allocation before the crisis hits. This reduces the political friction. And the inner vision anchor reminds the leader that even a successful national outcome is ultimately fragile if the rest of the world is collapsing. Global stability is the ultimate national security guarantee in an interdependent world. It requires seeing the bigger picture.
That definitely requires a shift from reactive crisis management to proactive systemic design. Okay, what about civil society and NGOs? Often they're seen as outside critics, sometimes thorns in the side of governments.
In awakened governance, their role is elevated. They become central. They are described as the conscience and the primary accountability mechanism of the system.
The conscience.
Yes. They amplify the voices and concerns of the most vulnerable refugees, communities on the front lines of climate change, victims of corporate exploitation. Their job is to constantly inject truth, urgency, and the human element into the often abstract discussions of governance. They ensure the system remains accountable to actual people, especially those without traditional political clout.
So they're essential for that C-step in the living rhythm, distinguishing alignment from distortion.
Precisely. They help pierce through political spin and corporate lobbying to reveal the real-world impacts of policies. Their role is integral, not peripheral.
And finally, the elephant in the room, the private sector and business. Global capitalism is a massive force. AGG can't succeed if it just treats business as the enemy, can it?
No, it demands partnership, but on different terms. The private sector must transition from being seen solely as engines of economic growth to becoming genuine partners in stewardship.
Partners in stewardship. What does that mean for a typical multinational corporation?
It means taking responsibility far beyond shareholder value. It requires radical transparency in supply chains, proving they aren't built on exploitation or environmental destruction. It means committing to ethical innovation that genuinely serves human well-being, not just creates new dependencies or risks. It means actively aligning the pursuit of profit with the larger collective purpose of planetary stability and flourishing.
So corporations need to see that their own long-term survival depends on social and ecological coherence.
Exactly. When they grasp that, they shift from being potentially extractive forces to becoming stabilizing ones. They start investing in resilience, in fair labor practices, in sustainable technologies, even if it means lower short-term profits. It includes things like supporting equitable taxation systems that fund public goods rather than lobbying to avoid them. It's a fundamental shift in corporate purpose.
This idea of collective responsibility, with all actors playing a transformed role, seems to demand a whole new way of interacting. This brings us to awakened diplomacy. If conventional diplomacy is often about competitive bargaining, What's the core function of this living bridge?
Awakened diplomacy is presented as the art and practice of achieving coherence, building trust, and fostering genuine alignment. It's about restoring dialogue to its original purpose, finding shared understanding and solutions rather than just negotiating for advantage. The source emphasizes it's about presence, not performance.
Okay, but what does that actually look like at a negotiation table? Does the diplomat just abandon their country's interests? That seems unlikely.
It's not about abandoning national interests entirely, but fundamentally reframing them. An awakened diplomat understands that their nation's true long-term interest is inextricably interwoven with the global interest. The focus shifts.
From what can I get out of this deal?
To how can we structure this agreement together to maximize long-term shared stability, fairness, and trust for everyone involved? It requires skills like deep listening, empathy, seeking mutual understanding, and consciously moving away from those default adversarial postures of traditional statecraft.
And this isn't just for formal treaty talks.
No, the idea is that this mode of interaction presence, integrity, seeking coherence, must permeate cooperation across all spheres. Whether it's setting standards for AI, managing trade flows, or addressing security concerns, every interaction should build trust, not undermine it. Moving with integrity, not just rivalry.
That's a high bar for daily interactions.
Yeah.
Now, if this is the demanding mindset, is there a practical tool offered to help leaders and decision makers actually navigate this complexity? It sounds overwhelming.
Yes, the source material introduces a specific tool, the Awakened Leadership Compass.
A compass. What is it exactly?
It's described as a guidance framework. Apparently, it's already being used in some contexts. It's designed to translate those high-level principles we've been discussing, presence, coherence, responsibility, the anchors, into practical, actionable research and analysis for decision makers.
So it's not like a rule book or a checklist?
No, definitely not a rigid checklist. It's framed more as a high-level analytical lens, a tool for reflection and assessment.
Could you walk us through how a leader might use this compass in a real-world situation? Say, developing a new national energy policy.
Okay. So the government team designing the policy would essentially run their proposals through the compass framework. The compass doesn't dictate the policy. It doesn't say you must use solar or ban coal. Instead, it provides a structured analysis based on AGG principles.
asking questions like,
does this policy truly align with the long-term inner vision for a stable climate and equitable society? Does it inadvertently create distortions, maybe unfairly benefiting certain corporations or regions while harming others, violating the C principle? Does it uphold our ecological duty, coherence with environmental protection? Does it ensure fairness for workers in the transition, heart-centered alignment? Does it deliver tangible, positive results? Materiality.
So it stress tests the policy against the core values.
Exactly. It provides the research framework and the decision prompts needed to navigate that complexity. It helps ensure that choices, even those made under pressure, are constantly tested against the deeper demands of fairness, long-term vision, and systemic coherence that AGG requires. It helps leaders translate that ethical presence into concrete strategic steps.
It sounds like an internal...
That's a good way to put it. An internal audit for coherence. And it's explicitly rooted in the broader awakened leadership model, aiming to ensure decisions carry that quality of soul and ethical clarity the whole framework is built on.
Before we wrap up, it feels important to briefly place AGG in its context. It stems from the larger awakened leadership movement founded by Sandeep Mehra. And the structure of the movement itself seems unusual, reflecting that anti-procedural ethos we talked about.
That's a really critical point, yeah. The movement is consistently described in the source material as a soul-born initiative, a living, breathing movement of consciousness, and it consciously avoids traditional institutional structures.
It's explicitly not a registered NGO or a foundation or a commercial company.
Correct. It's structured legally under a sole proprietorship.
Why that specific choice? Why operate outside the very institutional frameworks it aims to influence or reform?
The stated reason is to maintain its sovereignty, its clarity, its focus. By deliberately choosing a non-institutional path, the idea is to ensure that all its energy and resources go directly into the mission itself, the research, the advocacy, the quiet diplomacy, spreading the core principles.
Rather than getting bogged down in.
In building and maintaining a large organizational bureaucracy, fundraising, managing staff in the conventional sense, it's an attempt to sustain the essence of the work, the core message, and prevent it from being diluted, captured, or compromised by the very procedural complexities and institutional demands it seeks to transform in the wider world. It mirrors the philosophy in its own structure.
Well, this has been an incredibly dense and detailed deep dive. We've unpacked a framework awakened global governance that is asking for nothing less than a conscious, fundamental refoundation of how humanity organizes itself on this planet.
It really is. It's a proposal to consciously replace those default settings of rivalry and competition with cooperation and genuine stewardship, swapping performance for presence.
And the core demand running through everything is coherence. Total alignment across all the systems that shape our world, climate, trade, security, human rights. They can't be separate battles anymore.
Exactly. They have to be seen and managed as interconnected responsibilities of essentially one human family sharing one fragile planet. The current world operates on fragile compliance when it works at all. AGG insists on robust systemic coherence rooted in ethics.
And for you, the listener, this framework offers a new lens. A different standard for judging what's happening in the world. When you hear about a new trade deal or a tech breakthrough or a global summit,
AGG asks you to measure it not just by legality or political spin or short-term economic gain,
but against deeper questions.
Okay.
Is this coherent? Does it align with our responsibility to life, to fairness, to the future? It demands a higher standard of accountability from everyone, from leaders to corporations to ourselves.
It does. And the source material makes a powerful closing argument. Our collective survival can't ultimately rest on just better procedures or more cleverly written documents. It requires something deeper and awakening. It requires leadership at all levels that carries soul into systems, clarity into action.
Which leads us to the final thought for reflection.
Yes. If governance truly needs to move from procedure to presence, as AGG argues, then we all have to ask ourselves where in our own lives, in our workplaces, in the communities or institutions we're part of, where are we just relying on procedure, going through the motions, following the safe, prescribed steps that maybe obscure reality? And where is what's truly needed? Presence. That immediate, honest, ethical, and coherent engagement with the situation, with each other, and with the world.
That is a profound and challenging question for all of us to take away. Thank you so much for guiding us through the intricate architecture and demanding vision of awakened global governance today.
It was my pleasure. A lot to think about.
Indeed. We'll see you next time on The Deep Dive.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.